नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टकी। सो वी रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम। कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 54 एंटाइटल्ड द मैरिज ऑफ कृष्णा एंड रुक्मिणी टेक्स्ट 40। प्लीज रिपीट आफ्टर मी। क्षत्रियानाम् अयम् धर्मः प्रजापति विनिर्मितः भ्रातापि भ्रातरम् हन्याद् येन घोरतमस् ततः। क्षत्रियानाम् अयम् धर्मः प्रजापति विनिर्मितः भ्रातापि भ्रातरम् हन्याद् येन घोरतमस्ततः। क्षत्रियानाम् अयम् धर्मः प्रजापति विनिर्मितः भ्रातापि भ्रातरम् हन्याद् येन घोरतमस्ततः। क्षत्रियानाम् अयम् धर्मः प्रजापति विनिर्मितः भ्रातापि भ्रातरम् हन्याद् येन घोरतमस्ततः। माताजी प्रजापति भ्रातरम् हन्या क्षत्रियाणाम् ऑफ वॉरियर्स अयम् दिस धर्म कोड ऑफ सेक्रेट ड्यूटी प्रजापति बाय द ओरिजिनल प्रोजेनिटर लॉर्ड ब्रह्मा विनिर्मितः एस्टैब्लिश्ड भ्राता अ ब्रदर अपि इवन भ्रातरम हिज ब्रदर हन्यात हैज टू किल येन बाय विच कोड घोरतमः मोस्ट टेरिबल ततः देयरफॉर। Translation and purport by disciples of His Holiness, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. So, translation. Turning to Rukmini, Balaram continued, "The code of sacred duty for warriors established by Lord Brahma enjoins that one may have to kill even his own brother. That is indeed a most dreadful law." Purport. Lord Balaram, in the interest of fairness, is giving a complete analysis of the situation. Although one should not kill a relative, there are extenuating circumstances according to military codes. In the American Civil War, which took place in the 1860s, many families were divided between the Army of the North and that of the South, and thus, fratricidal killing unfortunately became a common affair. Such killing is certainly ghoratma, most dreadful. Yet, such is the nature of the material world, where duty, honor, and so-called justice often create conflict. Only on the spiritual platform in pure Krishna consciousness can we transcend the unacceptable pain of material existence. Rukmi was maddened by pride and envy, and thus could not understand anything about Krishna or Krishna consciousness. Om Ajnan Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Smai Shri Gurave Namah Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Taptakanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishubhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarudasya Kripa Sindhuva Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swamiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Asyata Deshatarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So in the explanations of Lord Balaram, which is trying to appease Rukmini because of her brother Rukmi being humiliated, he makes some very interesting points about, first of all, material life being such a painful it's so painful, and as explained in the purport, it is not difficult at all. It's one of the things which we may have many differences in this room, perhaps a few hundred devotees are here, but I think on one thing we all will be agreeable without doubt, that we have all experienced at some point or the other that material life has a lot of miseries. Maybe at this stage, we may have overcome it and suddenly things look bright. But we have had that experience. And it does not need much intelligence to understand that if you just look around us, and any sane person who's really an open-minded person would just has to see over what is happening over the last year, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and see how the trend is becoming so much worse. Even if you look at a macro level of between countries, today hardly any country in the world it is impossible to think of even a single country where there is completely, even relative peaceful existence. There is always so much turmoil going on. And perhaps no time in history has there been so much turmoil going on at the same time. 30, 40, 50 years ago, we were hearing this, the problem about in the Middle East. That is still going on, of course, between, you know, Israel and the Middle East countries. India and Pakistan have had a long history of problems right from the partition days on and off. Is the problem reduced? It is not reduced. 25, 30 years ago, at the creation of the Western countries, the war in Afghanistan was started. It was cooked up, and it was really a proxy battle between the US and Russia, but Afghanistan became the battlefield. It's like they say, when two elephants clash, you know, the grass gets trampled upon. So, and that problem is still going on, because now we have terrorists who come from Afghanistan who are considered the bad terrorists. And the terrorists who are on the western side of Pakistan who harass India are considered the good terrorists. That is their category. But that problem is still on. That means not a single problem gets solved. North and South Korea, they had a big problem. They had a fight for they split, and they had a independence war which culminated in the division in 1950. Today it's 75 years ago. It is still 65 years ago. It is still, the problem is still going on. North Korea is considered to be, by certain people, certain parts of the world considered to be so-called axis of evil. You see, anywhere, today Russia is having a war with Ukraine. Egypt is having several revolutions in the last few years. Thailand is on the boil. Every single country has this problem. And if you look at it even from an individual point of view, a human point of view, we see there is so much of fighting going on, so much of tension and agony. Everything is at a flashpoint. One thing just can, one little incident, and it can completely everything can go awry. The extent of inhumanity, man's inhumanity to man, knows no limits. It goes beyond what was unthinkable even if there were any codes of war, they don't exist. We talk of, in the Kurukshetra war, we have such graphic descriptions of Duryodhan, and we feel he was evil. But even they had certain codes they followed. So when there was sundown, war would end. There would absolutely be no fighting after war. There was only one exception, and that was condemned for eternity. Even Duryodhan condemned it. Similarly, they would fight also one-on-one from the front. Again, there was an exception in Abhimanyu's case, but again, that was extremely strongly condemned. So, those were exceptions. But by and large, there were strong differences, and there were people who were with Krishna, who were against Krishna. But nevertheless, there were at least certain codes. Today, then you don't see any codes at all. So, when we do find certain pieces of happiness or certain progress, and sometimes some things may fit in and think that, well, we are now on the right path because everything is fitting in. My educational qualifications have now landed me a very successful job, and I'm getting quick promotions. Then marriage happens, and then we find that, well, educated young lady has entered my life, and or a husband has entered my life, and now income levels are going, and now we are going to have a new house. There's a lot of excitement, and the first child may come. You may have pockets of this, but it is the same person who will always see through the eyes of the Shastra, who will always want to hear the words of wisdom, and then you don't need to take to know more what happens today. Even around us, why do we need to see, say, something like what happens in Peshawar? If you know how gruesome that it is beyond imagination, how people can come to a level where the terrorists can actually look for, they enter not only an indiscriminate killing something like 130 odd children, But actually, it wasn't just blind killing. It took a couple of hours. They were going after door to door. Children were hiding below tables. They would catch them out and shoot them point blank on the head. So, and then at the end of that, after 2 hours when they had finished, they were of course being remote controlled by some people. So they called up and said that this is what they were, because the phone conversations were recorded, and they were completely they were so relaxed about it. And they said, "Abhi sabko khatam kar diya, abhi kya karna hai?" This is the conversation going on. And then they were told that, well, you wait there till let the army come, and then when the army comes, you pick a war and then you blow yourself up. Because they knew that they were going to blow themselves, because in their religion they are told that they will, that is their progress. So we may be despairing at such kind of levels of going on, but we should not be surprised. If we see from the eyes of the Shastra, and if we hear from the words of the sadhus, and we, at whatever stage we heard first words of Krishna consciousness, we have been told that this is a world of quarrel and hypocrisy. This is a world of darkness. This is a world where we need to take it as a temporary step, an opportunity to progress. The good thing is that we have been given this opportunity with full intelligence. How we use it, and how we dovetail our external needs, bodily needs, with our internal needs. First of all, to understand that there is an internal, there is a soul, and which needs its own, it has its own needs, which are a priority. So setting priorities, all these would be wisdom. And it is not that we were told suddenly after some event happens. This is there in history for millions of years. So one cannot have any doubt as to how is it that these words have stood the test of time. They're timeless. They are not meant to, they were not written for a particular period. Yes, the occasions happened, but every word or every incident and every purport we read is actually applicable at any time. So we can see that when we go ahead, you know, when we look ahead, this has to be the foundation on which we go forward. So we should not be surprised at what happens. We should be, in fact, surprised at ourselves that in spite of knowing this, if we do not, if we succumb to moments of a weakness, that should alert us or alarm us, and we have to use that as a motivator to see how we can go forward. It is not a matter of why this happened, why so and so thought like this, because each one is, see, today, if you look at on a bodily level, there will be people, like all these incidents, and we said all these countries, they may be at war. There will be, depending on which side you are on, you will always think that I am the victim, the other person is the perpetrator. But actually, who is the victim and who is the perpetrator, who can say? You know, if you are a mother whose 18-year-old son, he may have committed acts, but you know, he may have been severely tortured, for instance, and he may have been harassed beyond to such an extent. He may have seen some kind of violence when in his youth, to his family, and you know, he has seen in his own eyes, and whatever is happening now, whatever incidents we have seen, we read about, people witness it. What is the reaction on them? And there are many people who will, you know, completely turn, it just, something snaps in them, right? And then when they make an act, a criminal act. So we may look at the act, which is very unfortunate, and certainly it would be criminal. But there is a whole history behind it. And if you are a family member of that person, and you have seen how this person has been tortured, then he or she will have a different perspective. So it is always a matter of which side you are looking at. They have, all of them have strong justifications. For instance, we say that one country which is the most powerful country in the world, would has always been acting as self-appointed policeman of the world. They say that all their acts are justified because they need to protect the world. Now, from their point of view, it is, everything is under national security. Whether they have, they tapped 600 million phones, including the West German Chancellor's phones also tapped, that they will accept it as, well, we need to protect ourselves, and because we protect ourselves, we are protecting the world. So they have a strong justification. They don't have a criminal mind. They actually feel that they are doing holy. But if someone else is the affected party, he has a different perspective. He will say, how can this? He's outraged that, you know, you talk of democracy and privacy, and where is the privacy? How it can be done? So there will always be two sides to it. But the Shastras tell us that there is no victim and perpetrator. We are all victims. All of us are victims of illusion, and all of us are victims of ignorance. So at the end of the day, you may be, the criminal who has killed a certain person. You may have beheaded someone. And you may have certain gory enjoyment at that time, perhaps. But we can see that that person is also a victim. Ultimately, the laws of karma are not going to release anybody. And therefore, we need not worry about someone else and spend our whole lives scratching our heads and saying that, you know, what he must be doing, and how bad he is, and so on. We have to look at ourselves, because really speaking, we may not have committed that act, but mentally we may be committing many offenses ourselves. So a wise person or a sincere person is one who puts maximum emphasis on introspection and takes every opportunity to see as an explanation, or as a he tries to observe what is the lesson that he or she can learn. So, with the firm conviction that there is serious natures, there are problems that may be there, there would be some lessons, there are always some lessons that come through that. So, and then when we look back, we may understand those lessons, they may be revealed to us. But at that time, whether we understand or not, that conviction helps us to act in the right way. No matter, we don't have a instantaneous reaction to the issues which may confront us. So this would be a consistent and a transparent approach to events that happen in our lives. Actually, we may from the points of Shastra, we need to understand how we act. And we always keep hearing that there is the false ego that really comes in play. So what is this false ego? How does it cover the our thinking? Because this is what mentally we may hear, that actually we should act on a real ego, our real spirit, our real on the act of the soul, and it should not be covered by if the soul gets attached to the various activities of the senses, which may be guiding us through the mind, because of that, then we develop these misidentifications, and then we act on that basis. But this misidentification is primarily starting from the fact that everything we do is, we look at ourselves in not in relation to the Creator, to Lord. So the fundamental principle in all this is that the only difference really is that all these acts, if they are not in relation to Krishna, not in relation to the Supreme Creator, that is the problem. Otherwise, there has to be governance, there has to be different classes of people. There will be. There will always be people, there will always be a president of a country, a prime minister, there will be a government. They have to take difficult decisions. They cannot please everyone. Then even similarly, individual people, there will be problems. But the most important thing is that, is it in relation to the acceptance of the Lord? And when we say the relation in terms of acceptance of the Lord, it is in essence in spirit, not just that say that we, because even this can be abused, and we see that people may act in the name of religion, and they can do perhaps as bad, if not worse, things. So, and then people condemn God, but actually that is not spiritualism. So spiritualism is where all the qualities that are necessary to please the Lord and to please His devotees, as we have seen that if we are introspecting ourselves, that is the essence. Not that we would do it for only on what pleases us. So, I am the doer or Krishna is the doer is always the question. I am the enjoyer or Krishna is the enjoyer. So, we will have an enjoyment in serving and in seeing that we can please the Lord. And that's the connection that we can make with the Lord. So, the problem for all of us is that for everybody, is that in this world, the minute you are born, the entire circumstances around us don't give us a chance to think that there's anything else who can be responsible for various activities that happen. The entire circumstances are created in such a way that we are completely, mesmerized and everything that we do, we feel that we are the doer. And the roots of success, when we look around, we may see, we will only look at those people who have, where we can measure the success in terms of quantity. For instance, someone who is the youngest person to have scored a century, or the youngest person who has become a billionaire, or the one who has accumulated the most assets, for instance. Or perhaps even in non-financial terms, there may be activities, somebody who's a great sportsman or a great writer. We appreciate that only because of success in their own fields. Now, we do not recognize that someone has been given this creativity, this knowledge, this blessings from the Creator, and that real glory should go to the Creator, and at least the acknowledgement should be there. So that is the missing link. So it is not that we do not appreciate what is there around us. There are so many things that we can appreciate because all this is God's creation. But if we keep, because by avoiding it, what it does is that it enhances our own self-prestige and our own belief that we have the key to the success, and we can analyze our failure and we can chart our future course of success. And that success will only be inevitably be measured by material success. So when we exclude that, then problems of misidentification get aggravated. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually, when he asked Ramanand Rai, who is the most educated person? Ramanand Rai's reply was very revealing. He said, the person who understands the science of God is the most educated. Very simply put, he didn't say that there have to be 9 degrees behind his name or has to specialize in this or that. So, all of those are also useful. In fact, as we have been explained, that they're all various zeros which have a certain value only if you put a 1 in front. So, if you have only 1 zero, it is 10, but if you have 2 zeros, it could be 100 and more. So, therefore, there is a value, but if we link it to Krishna, then we can do for the humanity a good for humanity for all, because then the consciousness would be inclusive rather than exclusive. The consciousness would be not just internal seeking, but actually would be external seeking. That when we find happiness in giving, when we find happiness in helping others, and then giving our propensities. Everyone has some propensities. Some may be very strongly academically blessed. Some may be having artistic talents, some may be very creative, some may be very astute administratively, some may be very astute in agriculture or in farming or in business. Whatever they do, they are all attributes given. And if the consciousness is that's the one, that is where we say that we acknowledge the Krishna, and Krishna is only looking for us to even turn towards Him a little bit, and He will step forward many, many times more. So basically, this is concrete proof that Ramanand Rai, when he says that it is the science of God, somebody who knows it is the most educated. So the rest of it is academic education, which has a certain place, but it has to be subservient to the real wisdom. Similarly, when even Prahlad Maharaj was Bhakta Prahlad, when he was just a little boy and his father sent him to the best schools, when he came back and he asked him, what did you learn? What was the best thing that you learned? What was the most important thing you learned? So he said, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, and outraged his father. But that was very revealing from the answer, that he he also put the highest emphasis. It was not that Bhakta Prahlad had no understanding that he was just a country bumpkin. No, he was eventually ruled brilliantly for the whole planet, in fact. So he had all the attributes like all the other great kings. But they understood that those are, by extolling our own virtues, that is the worst thing that we can tell. In fact, no Vaishnava would like to hear, when other people are just speaking about themselves. So the best way to get respect from Vaishnavas is that we don't speak about it, but we just do. And that is what when we see, if we look around us, when we associate with devotees who have so much more to, they may have such qualifications, but they're doing it in such a humble way, not to somehow get attraction, but actually they're just doing it because they have pleasure in that, and they're pleasing other devotees, and they're pleasing their spiritual master, and in that way they're pleasing Krishna. That is a very attractive feature for us. That gives very great inspiration. So we should learn from that this is the way it's not just now, but that is they're following in the footsteps of great Mahajans who have come through millenniums, who have all been consistently acknowledging the presence, no matter whether they are great rulers of the entire empire or whether they are just he may be a washerman or just having their own small activity. That didn't matter. So devotional service does not have any goals. The only goal is pleasing Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotional service, in fact, brings us to the process. The process of serving, the process that we follow, and we are content in seeing that we perfect the process. Our contentment and our discontentment or our anxiety should be related to the process and whether we are following the process properly or not, not the goal. But whatever we are taught today, from childhood, is basically that we have to have a goal. Now, we have to stand first in class when we are young children. Then when we are adults, we have to have a certain financial goal. We have to have, and that becomes, everyone has to have sub-goals. That is, there's nothing wrong in having sub-goals. But if you have that exclusively without any, it becomes a single-minded focus where there is no link at all to the Creator. Then it becomes a competing and an envious situation for us. Because inevitably, we will not be able to accept the setbacks that will come. They're bound to be, there is, and we see that all the time. And then, if we have tasted success, then even a little bit of defeat or a little bit of setback, it becomes very difficult for us to accept. In fact, someone else is doing better, even if we have got a lot, it becomes very difficult. We have a Duryodhan mentality, and Duryodhan had everything. Finally, he got what he wanted. He put the Pandavas into the forest, and he couldn't even part with 5 villages. That became the mentality. And even then, he was in such anxiety. He was in all the time in anxiety because he kept feeling that supposing when they come back, and then unless I kill them, so then his goal became only that I will be only happy if they are completely. I can see that they are finished, they are killed. So that will be so it is an illusion to think that if we set a goal to the exclusion of everything else, then that will bring us happiness. So whatever goals we have cannot be the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal has to be to understand how our life has started, our life is going to end sometime or the other, sooner or later, and our process is to understand what is happening, how we came, where we are going, what we should be doing. And in the process, an important element is, but not the most important, is discharging our responsibilities. And we have several responsibilities, so we are wearing several hats together. Just like we have every time today, we may not realize, but we are simultaneously discharging many, we may be a husband or a wife. We may be having children, so then we are a father or a mother. We are having our own parents, that means we are simultaneously a son or a daughter to them. We are a citizen, so we are also casting votes and we act as a responsible citizen. Then we have an occupation, or we may be doing something, we are responsible to some. So this is, it's not that we do only one responsibility one day and another responsibility another day. The responsibility is with us all the time. So this is only one more, but the most important responsibility that we have been given life. And where have we come from? How we are going to discharge our primary responsibility? And whom are we responsible to? That accountability has to be there. We look for accountability elsewhere. You know, we always want to see that we must have, you know, everyone should take accountability for their actions. But the most important accountability we should not run away from, or we should not neglect, is the one which tells us where we are, who has given us this life and where we've come from. So even if it means, now this is an important point, even if it means that for most of us, we are confused many times. It is a long time, till we reach a level where we have a complete clarity of wisdom. Because we are talking of something which is, we have to battle against so many anarthas and so on. So we have so many difficulties. So we have a certain understanding, a certain faith, and we start the process. And then we also have our desires. We have our ambitions, and we want to do so many things. So what happens is that we do have our other desires, and we have our own mental understandings, and then the understanding grows, and then when we associate, and then we realize, we have realizations from our own experiences, we see other people's experiences, and we are talking about the absolute truth. So inevitably you cannot not remember it. You know, once you experience it, you cannot forget it. So you are bound to, so you are having conflicting things. So you may be having a mild intensity. When I say intensity means, you know, let's say there may be people who have 100% intensity, and then they have a goal. So the question is, if the goal is wrong, and when I say wrong means if to the exclusion of the existence of the Lord or even His presence at all, and everything is only to one goal, that even 100% intensity, that is in fact the worst thing that can happen. That would be better to have less intensity. That means you may be confused. Better to be confused for the right goal than to be very clear for the wrong goal. That is the most important point. And this is where we sometimes, you know, feel diffident, because we look around us, we see our confusion, we see we are not able to grapple with so many things, and we see others, you know, they are so clear in what they are doing. And they are just going ahead merrily, serenely, you know, whatever they feel internally, externally, they seem supremely confident, because that is also the training. They may be most miserable inside, but they have to be flashing that dazzling smile, and they have to act that way. And then that weakens our resolve. That is where association comes, that is where faith in the Shastras come, and not blind faith. We have to understand that we will have confusions, and it will take time to dispel that. Because after all, we have come through so many lifetimes, and we just can't expect a magic wand and everything is fine. There's no fairy tale ending. So we have to understand this, and it is a relief to know that even if I'm confused, but if I'm clear about the goal, the final goal, then it is a much better state than to have the wrong goal, and no matter how clear you are. Now, this doesn't mean, I would like to stress, because it should not be misunderstood, to saying that that we become complacent and we neglect other goals. Because there are responsibilities, they may not be a major goal, but there are responsibilities that we need to discharge. So somebody may feel that I don't have the ambition to be, let's say, the president of the company. I'm happy to be, I'm clever enough, I'm happy to be senior manager or a general manager, because I don't want to go beyond that. As an example, if it is more than suiting his family's needs, and if he's, but he's putting a lot of his efforts into other activities which are spiritual, and where he spends a lot of time, it's a wonderful thing. But if he was to take the easy way out and not have any responsibility even on a spiritual level, then that would be abdicating our responsibilities. Because one may feel that now, having tasted this, I'd like to come to the temple, I'd like to hear, I'd like to do that, but I have a family, I have 3 children, but I mean work, I'll go sometimes, then that is definitely a misunderstanding and misinterpretation of the responsibility. So responsibilities have to be discharged. It's a matter of priority. And priority does not mean that 18 hours go here and 6 hours, not by hours. It is a matter of consciousness. That consciousness can be anywhere. You may be in the bus traveling to work. You may be in the train. You may be in the car. But if you are, you have various thoughts that come in your mind. You have, it may also be, I've got this evening responsibility, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. So you have responsibilities which you'll discharge efficiently, and knowing that you are a representative of a great personality, Srila Prabhupada, and we people know that you are a Hare Krishna wale. So if you act improperly, then the bad name is not to you, but it goes to the founder of the Hare Krishna movement. That also should act as an incentive for us. But at the same time, if we are having, we have, and this creates anxieties, because when we have so many responsibilities, we have anxiety. Will I be able to do this? Will I be able to do that? Can I discharge my spiritual responsibilities or devotional activities? And I have to finish my rounds. I have to, help in the book distribution on this weekend. And I've got this limited time. How will I manage my time? So many things may have come through. And you spend time also trying to discharge that. That's a wonderful thing. So having, devotional service is no guarantee for peace. That's another thing which, if you come to Krishna consciousness thing, then now I just, then we are avoiding responsibility. We are not. In fact, devotional service is a guarantee for transcendental anxiety. So it's not a guarantee for peace, but what it does is that it destroys the misidentification. It destroys the identification of with the mind and the body, if we sincerely follow that. Because as we see, even a small example that in this room, or when we act on various services, we never even think what academic qualification the person next to me has, what background he has, what caste he comes from, whether he is Shanve, Kuli, Maratha, or whether he is this or Punjabi Brahmin. Nothing, it doesn't matter. We are sitting here in the same... there's no kind of OBC, ABC, XYZ, right? So this is, we can actually see that when we come here, we all one. We enjoy the kirtan, we really, we relish the nectar of the Bhagavatam. We are completely so intensely happy when we see some wonderful examples and devotees making progress, etc. So we actually, so when we look around, when we are observant, when we are aware, Krishna consciousness being aware of Krishna. Consciousness means it's an internal thing. So as much as we are aware of our surroundings, aware of what we are going through, so along with the confusions and along with the, at times we are in, we don't know how to grapple, we don't know how to, what we should do. We may take advice, but and that sometimes worries us, but it should not depress us. We should know that confusions will take time to dispel, but we have to be anxious to do the right things. And the right things is how we can, we may not find millions of examples because not too many people around us may be wanting the same, but doesn't matter. If you look around in your occupational environment, you may not find an immediate example or somebody who can reveal your heart to, but doesn't matter. But at the same time, how we can best cooperate with people and work. At the same time, how we can retain and nurture and, polish our internal consciousness side by side. That's a challenge which is a wonderful thing. It's a courageous thing, and it should be it's something which should give us great joy. So, pride comes in when we have absence of Krishna. We have so many acknowledgements, so many advancements, we have to have so many goals. And if we are pursuing that without the presence, then immediately it leads to pride. And then what it does is that it will certainly bring, because eventually, unless we give the credit to someone else, if we want to take the credit ourselves. There can only be, somebody is going to take the credit. Is it me or is it someone else? So, when we acknowledge Krishna and we are grateful to Him, really grateful, not just speaking the words, the right words, but actually feeling that, and we act on that basis also, then actually that's the best way to get Krishna's protection from this feeling that I am the doer. And you will not lose the incentive to do better, because if you have made mistakes, we would like to rectify it, we want to do it the best way. But at the same time, when we get opportunities, so many things happen, it may be favorable events that are happening, but we will not forget to offer the credit to Krishna. At the same time, if we are feeling extremely proud and we are successful, You are bound to create envy in others. So the envy and pride are the two twin traps that are there. Because inevitably there will be many who will be feeling that, I can do better than him, I can do better than her. So this constant battle, we don't know, we are creating a worse situation by bringing envy into other people's hearts. And it happens, because if we don't, so if we are looking at others and when envy happens, when we are envious of somebody's success, then we are happy at his mistakes. And then we are also looking to see how we could, how we can improve our situation vis-a-vis that person. So it becomes an extremely unhealthy and unpleasant situation. So when we talk of harmony, when we talk of cooperation, that is absent. You cannot have envy and talk of harmony or talk of cooperation. So today, unfortunately, in the outside world, success is given the highest merit, and it is given single-mindedly. It doesn't matter whether you are the most rude person, the most arrogant person, it may be the most disrespectful to everyone or to your parents. It doesn't matter how you behave, what you spoke. Ultimately, if you have got the success, then then that's it. And people look at that. And then, if at all you have stepped over, if you've gone, stepped over the boundaries, then you have the power and the capability and the financial means to make sure that the right news comes through. So the whole emphasis becomes only on creation of an image. So that will go on, but how long will it go on? Only till this life. So, and Krishna in your heart, Paramatma is seeing every step. He understands the thought before it even appears in your mind. He is aware of it. So he is aware of your intentions also, intentions behind the thought. So with all the success, one would say it is foolishness, it is lack of intelligence to feel that we are fooling someone. It's like a child, sometimes the child is playing hide and seek. And if this 3-year-old child, you may have experienced it, a child will hide behind the door, and then when you say, "Can you find me?" Now you know the child is there because the voice comes from there, just 5 feet away. But the child thinks that he or she is hiding and will not be found, but we can see it. So Krishna must be seeing that, whether this person thinks he is doing all these activities, thinking that he is fooling everyone, nobody is seeing it. I am seeing it with binoculars, the front view he's got, he's got the front view, back view, he's right there. So even that should be having a deterrence to us, that that could bring us guilt, or if we have done something wrong, it'll give us an incentive to rectify it. It'll give us an incentive to overcome our laziness. So whatever we need to do, we get that push if we are constantly on the right, in the right association. So these are the kind of thoughts that will be protecting us. So it is, and the most heartening thing is that it is runs parallel to all our responsibilities. The greatest contribution, one of the greatest contributions is ISKCON movement, and when Srila Prabhupada started, he really brilliantly demonstrated how every person can actually take it up. It is because initially the thought was, at least I was thinking that, and I think practically everyone would think that one has to be of a certain age, and we have to be totally retired, and then only we can take to spiritual life, because otherwise how will I discharge my present responsibilities? Prabhupada demonstrated for this day and age how the Harinam Sankirtan is the greatest, is all that you need to do, and that can be done anywhere. The holy name can be chanted anywhere. It doesn't require any conditions. So he removed all the disclaimers and all the other things, made it very simple. You can just chant anywhere. It doesn't mean that even if you've not had a bath, you can pick up your beads and chant. Any time of the day, night or day, if you're on the streets, if you are in the temple, you can chant. So, linking, of course, concentrating and chanting is important. So it's not that we casually do it. But the thing is that we can do it any time. We can always, it is not that there is any conditions. So given that, it has straight away removed all the obstacles that can be there. Along with it, whatever we can, whatever we are doing in our 10 hours or 12 hours of work and travel and all in a day, we have, there is more than half the time left to us which we can do it in any way we want to. So, so the question would be that how, you know, where does this false ego come from? So I'd like to give an analogy which you must have heard, but it's one of the most revealing ones. There's a brilliant analogy in our in the Bhagavatam that just like the moon rays, you know, they come through when we see sometimes we have a full moon and we have such a bright, you don't even need any lights in the room also, it's so clear. And then you have sometimes the moon is completely covered up. Similarly, in the monsoon season, the sun gets covered. So, the analogy is that actually, we see the clouds. How do we see the clouds? The clouds which are blocking the moon or the sun, even that we are seeing only because of the moonlight and the sunlight. So, without the moonlight or the sunlight, we cannot even see the clouds. So, they are behind, they are being covered temporarily, but actually the source of our illumination to see the clouds also, which are covering, is also coming from behind, is coming from the sun. In the monsoon time also, we may not see the sun directly, but we actually the sunlight is only giving us the ability to see the clouds. So similarly, that the false ego is that covering, which actually covers the soul. So the soul is always the constant source of all the purity and the activity, because it is in constant, it is the part of Krishna. But because we allow the false ego to come, so this covering is to be removed. And that is the whole effort to see that, to guard against that. And the false ego is nothing but the absence of Krishna. To think that I am the doer and I am the enjoyer and everything is meant for me. So me means extended family. It could be immediate family. It could be even the community. It could be the nation. But if there is complete absence of the Lord's presence or acknowledgement of His being the final controller and proprietor, then all of this is only going to add to our karmic reactions. And this the living entity has both the gross and the subtle bodies. So the subtle body is where we talk of the mind, intelligence, and false ego. So the soul is actually getting its actions and its ambitions and its desires, the living entity is getting all these actions is really depending on our mentality, our thinking, our mind, which actually dictates it. And which is, that means the subtle body is really the one which drives the activities and takes us to, and according to those actions that we've done, the next time we'll get a gross body, which will be conducive for that. So that means we are now putting so much effort in seeing how we could improve our gross body. But there's very little we can do. We can do, ultimately it's anyway going to grow old and decay and die. So in the meantime, we try to preserve it. So if you were to spend an unusually long time and money and effort only preserving that, compared to that, what is actually happening, how we can change our subtle body is more important. So people don't, we don't generally remember this, so we spend a huge amount of effort and time in concentrating on how we can change our external, the gross body. Maybe if we are, you know, how we can enhance our beauty, how we can make me look much better, how we can extend our age, how we can appear younger, healthier. So certainly we need to keep our body healthy. We should see that it is, you know, it is ultimately also a responsibility given to us. But we should not neglect that the change in the gross body is not so important as much as the change in the subtle body, because gross bodies will keep changing, but the root is the subtle body, and the subtle body is always there. So the mind, intelligence, false ego, depending on how they are, the conditioning that is there or the activities are going to be dictated by them. So if that doesn't get changed or purified, then they'll always be putting us into trouble. We'll be into greater difficulty. So yeah, and then the there's a perfect example in the Shastra, Ambarish Maharaj, who is one of the great kings who actually rule the entire planet, and he is considered to be the one of the great role models, because if you study his life, actually all his activities and all his senses were completely dovetailed in though he was ruling the entire planet Earth. At the same time, he was not even for a moment neglecting the fact that he was always the servant of the Lord, and all his activities were according to that thinking and consciousness. So all his senses he would engage in enhancing that feeling of and that consciousness of being part of Krishna. So yeah, and Srimad Bhagavatam gives us a very nice in Srimad Bhagavatam we are told that when we take to Krishna consciousness, or when we take to when we take birth itself, we should try to cultivate our understanding of that we are not this body. But then when we take to Krishna consciousness, the Srimad Bhagavatam tells us that if you really want to advance in spiritual life, the most important thing is to try to control your mind. Why? Because the same things that if we can control our mind, then we'll be able to see the actions and activities of the Paramatma that much more. And when we do that and we are guided by that, then all our problems get solved. But in the modern civilization, what we have been taught is quite opposite, that how we cannot accept authority, we should do our own independent thinking, we don't need to believe in the Shastras. So one has to use our own intelligence, and that intelligence can be purified in the association of devotees. Similarly, the Bhagavad Gita also says that if there's only one thing that you can do, just one thing, then that most important thing is that you try to control your mind. Because in that if you make every effort to try to see that our mind doesn't take us everywhere and make us act in so many different ways, and then it is in Maya so strong that it actually puts the blame on others, that actually my problem is because of someone else. So actually the problem is only our mind. Our mind is only what is really making us act in such ways. There's a very nice example given in the analogy given in the Bhagavatam, which illustrates this, how the mind can be the effect of a controlled mind versus a completely uncontrolled mind. And the analogy is with a lamp, a lantern. If you have a lantern, if you've seen a lantern, you see the wick, and the wick is which gets lighted, it is actually in contact with the ghee. So if the wick is not controlled properly, the lantern becomes black, and when the lantern becomes black, so we can't actually, even though there's light outside, but we cannot see, because the glass gets covered by the darkness. So the analogy is that the wick is like the mind, and the ghee is like the Harinam, the Harikatha, Hari Seva, because actually the ghee comes through through the wick and gives the light. When you light it, the contact with the ghee is critical. So the mind is the wick, and the Harinam, Harikatha, and all the Krishna conscious activities are all right there. So the minute you keep in touch with them, then actually there is you have a properly controlled wick, means a properly controlled mind, which means that the illumination is clear. Because if it is not illuminated, it becomes black. So if the mind is not controlled properly, then there is blackness, there's darkness, and darkness in our own life, and then we see everything according to that, in the world. If we are angry and upset, then we will have hatred towards others. And if we have been offended, we take the offense on others. And on the other hand, if we actually have a clarity of who we are and how we are responsible for our own actions, that clarity comes when we constantly have this Hari Katha, Hari Seva, and we don't overreact to events. And even if we have problems, we have setbacks, we slowly learn to accept it and to take one step further. So this analogy becomes very useful to us to understand that gives us the guidance that we need to, the action in our, on our side is that we need to keep in touch with the right people. So one would say, where is what do I need to do? We keep hearing that constant detachment and constant association are the two things. And, but then that nobody can, you know, you can take the horse to the water, but you can't make the water horse drink the water. So finally we have to do it. So after giving all this guidance and wisdom, we are taken to the, we are given the opportunity to actually act on our own basis, because ultimately that independence has to be exercised by us. So if we exercise it, you know, in a wise way, then we will be able to take it further and on the right path. If we exercise it the wrong way, then it's going to take us to the wrong path. So at the end of the day, we are responsible for our own actions. We can, just like in an exam, when you sit, you are sitting behind on the desk, you have your exam paper, finally you have taken all the help you can, you have taken tuitions and you have gone to coaching classes, you have also gone through your textbooks, you have attended your school, a college, and you have got wisdom, you have tried to understand it, but finally you are alone. And you are sitting there, you have your desk, you have your exam, then you have your answer sheets, and then well, you do as well as you can. So, and you have a certain time limit. So we are exactly in the same position, because the life final exam is at the time of departure. So when we, and which can come any time. So it may be far away, it may be 50 years away, or it could be 5 months away, we don't know. But if you think that, the Shastras tell us how the mind can fool, thinking that, well, if I just wait, then someday I will have the enthusiasm. But actually if you're going the wrong way, with the wrong goals, then it makes it even more difficult than if it is difficult. If it's difficult now, it makes it impossible virtually to as we go along, because there is so much of covering, so much of attachment, so much of distractions that are there, that it takes us further away. So actually it's not that, there's nothing status quo. It's not that I can just replicate, like today I'm feeling like this, my thought process is there, and 10 years later or 20 years later, now everything else is settled, I can just uncover it and I'm back to the same thinking. No, it's not like that. There are so many impressions, millions of impressions and thoughts and observations and actions, and as if we made it difficult for us, then actually at that time we will only find many excuses and many reasons to say that I tried but I couldn't, or I didn't want to, it was difficult, and poor me, and it was so unfortunate, and it was so-and-so's problem or so-and-so's fault, but my roof fell down and my money bank balance was not there, my health was not there. There will be reasons to say always. But if we have actually understood and said that no, the time is now, then in which case all the actions that we are doing now get embellished, and even if the struggles are there, then the final exam comes, Krishna does take into account that it is the process that is followed. Just like in some some systems of education, they only look at the final answer. You got to write some, then you get it. But in many, they look at the process, and they write the right way, that the poor fellow has made a lot of effort, and 2 pages of various formula, and then he made some mistake here, but well, he's done on the right track. So you get credit for it. So similarly, if you follow the process diligently, even if we have mistakes, if we have setbacks, if we have deviations also, we don't do it trying to outsmart Krishna. If it is actually a genuine mistake, and maybe we are succumbing to some temptations, or you know, we have some bad habits of the past which surface, Krishna will certainly see, and He is more than merciful. We don't understand what is merciful. We cannot understand how merciful He is. But He knows, and He acts accordingly, and He'll give every help He can to pull us out. So we don't need to worry about that. But we do need to understand that final exam will be given by us. We have to be taking all the help. Even Guru and the devotees and all are there. But it's not that we don't need to do anything. We are not a robot. So we will take the help, but finally our actions will have to be answerable by us, and the karmic reactions will also have to be answered by us. So therefore while we take all the help and we feel comforted by the association, we should also know that at the end of the day, that has to be taken, translated into action by us, And every action that we do, the thought will lead to the action. So we'll be judged by actions. In Kali Yuga, at least there, we don't get minus marks for the wrong thoughts, because otherwise we would not even start. But definitely the wrong thoughts will take us to the action. So the actions is the most important. And for that, we need to act accordingly. And for that, the constant association with all paraphernalia of Krishna, including the deities, the devotees, the Bhagavatam, the scriptures, everything that is around us, and we can bring that into our home. Like Prabhupada took, when he went to preach all over the world, he always said, and he acted as, you know, that Vrindavan is taken with him. It's not that he left Vrindavan. The Vrindavan, the entire environment he created, whether he was in Los Angeles or whether he was in England, people actually, when they came in touch with a pure devotee, it was like Golok Vrindavan, because everything around him, people's thoughts were transformed, their whole actions, everything was in a spiritual level. So same way, we can transport this to our home in our own way, and if we act in a certain way, if we are taking our actions in a certain way, if we are ultimately keeping this in mind that Krishna is the proprietor, and whether we have little or small, more, all that belongs to us is ultimately belongs to Krishna. So, I'd like to end. Then before I end, I just wanted to speak a few words about the present month of December marathon. I think so many of you may be participating already, are hearing about it. But now we're coming to an end this month. We just got a few days more. As you, many of you may not be aware that Srila Prabhupada really went to the West and he enhanced, he spread Krishna consciousness in those 12 years. But he always acted and said also that much later than I go, the Krishna consciousness movement will go on for the next 10,000 years through the, I will be alive through the books. The books will, all the books that I write will be carrying this Krishna consciousness for the next 10,000 years. And we can see actually how that is really, that philosophy is the backbone of any institution. And then the actions really embellish it. So the distribution of books becomes a very critical need, because it is basically dissemination of the real information. Today we see the act of ignorance and how we can compel it. So December month, there is always, it's a tradition since 1973, for the last 41 years. Every day devotees are doing it, but in December everybody comes together and puts a massive effort all over the world. And then there's a transcendental competition. People are very happy to do better than what we did the previous year. At the same time, they're very happy if somebody has done better than what we have done. That is the real nature of spiritual life. That should be our thinking. That if we do 50% more than last year, but if someone does better than us, then we are very happy, because then that has inspired them to do more, and that way we can ultimately bring Krishna consciousness to the world. So actually, in whatever way we are helping, there are many, many devotees here in this congregation, and I'm talking only of Radha Gopinath, but this is only one tiny aspect of hundreds of temples all over the world, which are every day millions of people are on the streets. But Radha Gopinath temple, many things we don't even know, because not all the stories come through. But there are so many very powerful efforts going on. The bus parties are traveling in Gujarat and Rajasthan, which is having dozens of brahmacharis in each. They're selling thousands of books in this month. But that's not just the quantity. It is even there are so many single or small groups who are sitting at railway stations. And then we have the Khargar devotees who have uniquely come together. And then there's a large area there, which they, especially between the Panvel Vashis train stations there. We got a report just a few days ago that many devotees are selling at stations, but there are also some going to that train. And they've dubbed it the Gita Express, the Vashi to Panvel stretch. So many devotees are on that. And then there is the Sayan Kurla group, or Chembur, the Hindustan Petroleum Colony, all of them, they act as one group. And they are also, so there are the people who are directly in the front of the direct distribution of books. There are people who are helping by organizing prasad for them, the people who are driving the cars, people who are delivering the books. There are all sorts of efforts that are there. So one can participate. There are many who are financially supporting, also by giving it. We had a wonderful Gita Dan Yajna only day before, I think, 2-3 days ago, on Christmas Day. 113 people participated, and several of them are very keen to gift Gitas so that they can be distributed to the villages where people cannot afford. So there are so many ways of doing it. I mean, one of our senior devotees, Giriraj Prabhu, over this weekend he's taken his group, and he has a house in Navsari, so he's taken them there, and then from there they are going to actually spend the whole day on the streets, and he's offered his house to come and rest. So, you know, and then coming back also in the train, they will distribute books. So these are very inspiring. So there are devotees who can, I mean, those who would like to participate in any way to enter into this very wonderful effort can still do so. And Baldev Prabhu is here. Yeah, I think before we end, Baldev Prabhu will like to say something. I think he can actually give more inspiration and clarity on this book distribution and this unique effort that is going on. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions?
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Prabhuji, for wonderful enlightenment. You are mentioning about how Shastras say that everyone is victim. Everyone is victim, actually. Not one is victim and another is other side of the story. So a serious practitioner tries to introspect and learn some lessons out of it rather than, you know, doing the other side. So, but we try to do that and we try to learn lessons also. But there is a deep tendency in heart to justify, to prove ourselves that, no, I was right in that particular situation. So as you mentioned, no, that creating image kind of thing. So how to give up this tendency which is there? We try to introspect, we learn some lessons also out of the situation. But this tendency to justify, to clarify, no, to explain the other party, how to give up this tendency and focus our mind on Krishna? Because that time energy is going unnecessarily there.
It's a very good question. First of all, when I said we are all victims, the Shastra says that if we choose to be victims, that is, we are victims of illusion. So if we are if we are actually acting on the basis of the Shastras and trying our best to sincerely follow the tenets, then we are not a victim. We don't see it that way. But otherwise, we will be victims of illusion. To answer your question, spiritual life and Krishna consciousness is very subtle. There are gross aspects which are somewhat, let's say, initially in the enthusiasm, that is somewhat easier to control. Okay, no illicit sex, or no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication. We stop tea, coffee, etc. So it is a change, but we go through that. Then we come across the subtle problems, and we discuss substantially on that basis. And often the devotees don't even come to that level of thing. They think that we live on the level of we've done what we could. The external needs are done. The four pillars of sin we've controlled, and now then. We don't even introspect. So, as we introspect, we see, and some are more challenging than others. And the point you raised is actually one of the most, because when we talk of subtleties of distinction, profit, adoration, respect, it's a very deep-rooted and also very, it's not very obvious. So the only answer that we have to be, one is that we have to be always constantly on the guard. And when we are aware of it, your question is how do we overcome it? It's a constant struggle, because actually if you overcome that, then we have made a huge progress. So that progress Krishna will not give it so easily. But I find that if you read this, you must have read the book, The Journey Home. That is actually answering this question to a large extent, because if you see the life of His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj, many devotees have met him or have spoken to him. And many have known him for 15, 20 years or 25 years, before the book came also. He hardly ever spoke about, some events were known, many events are not known. But all his life, if you see, he has been, you can easily justify a lot of the things, the same points that so many things were against him. You know, so many things before he came to in touch with Prabhupada also, when he, money got stolen, and then how he was attacked, and you know, we had went through Iran and Afghanistan and all that. There are so many events that have happened, and then the way he was treated in India also. But he never, and then even after he came to in touch with devotees, and even later, and why even, and there are events beyond the book also. So, but he has never led his life based on lamenting, or even acting on the basis that somebody is to be responsible for this. Or if he's doing well, that he's taking the credit. So actually, I find that this book is a very, so we can always observe others, those who have overcome this. And that's the best inspiration we can get. So we can then have a benchmark to measure. You know, we always need something to see, like, you know, even in business, when we see how are we performing, I mean, how are we compared to others. So while we don't live on that basis and we are not using it as a competitive tool, but nevertheless, as a overcoming our weakness, or which, and this is one which probably most of us would have. It's very difficult to overcome the subtleties of distinction and reputation and feeling that we are the doer, etc. We have to find other examples, and here we have not just in the Shastra, but also right now in front of us. So there may be others in the, there are others of course in the Shastras, but I think if you go through the journey home and go through the incidents, and then see that there is no mention of how he has overcome it, or how he has faced up to challenges, both challenges as well as the successes. So taking someone's life and observing it, that is really the essence of association. So I can only say that that would be the best way we can attempt it. Yeah. Radhesham Prabhu can answer. I could add to that, Prabhu?
No. I'm going to ask another question. So, actually, I rarely get to hear you like this, Prabhu. Such a wonderful class. I always was eager to know from you what is the secret of your Vaikuntha consciousness, which you always carry. We have some 200 students have come from Pune and other places here today. They have started chanting 16 rounds just 6 months ago. And they will all be passing out in a couple of years from engineering, and they will be getting into their jobs. So I wanted to know from you, how you have kept yourself like a lotus in a muddy pool of water, you know, while doing the responsibilities in the business field and worldly duties, how you have kept your consciousness so clean. And introspection is a very easy word to say. But how you actually do that, and how these devotees, as they get into their job field and business and they grow, we have seen that they gradually become dull in spiritual life, oftentimes because the material responsibilities pull them in different directions, and they gradually become blurred in spiritual life. So how you have been keeping yourself very sharp and with such clarity in your speech and action and behavior? So your tips would be very valuable for us.
Well, as far as my speech is concerned, I've only been repeating what I've heard from Maharaj and the Shastra. So that's really taken from the Shastra. I think that certainly there are many weaknesses, many are obvious also. But I can only share one thing that, and I forgot to mention this, which is a very important point, that actually our spiritual progress can only come by attracting the mercy of the Lord. Which means that, and how do we attract the mercy of the Lord? By attracting the mercy of His representatives. How do we attract the mercy of His representatives? Is by pleasing devotees and pleasing the Lord. So, if the challenges come in our life, we know that it is only because Krishna has better things for us, and it is a wake-up call, or it is something which we can take it up further to go. And then we look back and we are so grateful that actually happened, that it was Krishna's kindness, that it should have been worse, but He did it in such a way that we didn't realize it, and we got a very valuable lesson. But if things do, if circumstances start happening positively also, even on a material level, or whatever way is happening, so we get that gratitude because we know that actually it is only by the mercy of the Lord. It's not a matter of figure of speech. It is actually a fact that we can only attract that mercy. So that mercy, if we invoke, then we can make any advancement. And so therefore our effort is only that we seek the mercy. And to seek that mercy, we have to act in that way. And that acting means we may dramatize it for some time, but you know, eventually if we are there, so even if we are in the movement because of, it's only because of Vaishnav's prayers and Vaishnav's blessings and mercy. So this association has one other major advantage, that other people are praying for us. We do not know we are in this movement only because of other people's prayers. We may be thinking that somehow I took this choice and I took that choice, and you know, but actually the fact is that we could have been derailed, but because we were protected by other people, the other devotees praying for us silently, Guru Maharaj, he was always praying for all of us. You know, Prabhupada is praying for all of us. So if we acknowledge that, then the gratitude will be even more, and whatever we do, we'll try to go through that and look for examples to seek help from. That's all I can say. Thank you. I think one last question, because Baldev Prabhu also has to share.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. No, the analogy what you gave about that wick, the lantern and the ghee. So if it is not controlled, said it creates a black soot. So obviously black soot means not very attractive. So I'm just asking now, what we see around is the people who start trends or who endorse. These are the film stars, sports stars, the politicians, or materially very successful people. But obviously they don't have any control over their mind and senses. But they are the one who appear very attractive. So I'm asking you this question because you have closely observed, because you are from that strata of the society. So you have closely observed them, whether it is film star or a sports star or a successful industrialist or whoever, you know. So these are the people who are leading or misleading, whatever you want to say. So I want to ask you, how is it that if it is a black suit, how is it attractive to us?
Actually, if our consciousness, this analogy is only if we are looking for improving our spiritual life. So, you know, if you want to, that way you can see an action, as we saw the action of a terrorist, for instance. I give an example that somebody kills. So someone may see it as black, or someone may see it as a great purity. So it's really the consciousness with which we see it. So you can have two sides to it. So then our final is only to see how from the eyes of the Shastra. So when it comes to people who have tremendous success, and then they're starting trends, or we can only consider ourselves very fortunate. We should not criticize them in that sense, because I would say they are extremely unfortunate, because and they don't realize it, because they have been given, it's so easy. If we were in that position, if I were in that position, I'm sure I would not be able to withstand that kind of the control. So fortunate, by not being in that position, if we are so wildly successful, it becomes so difficult not to get carried away. Because everybody is taking you to that level. So we can only say that the unfortunate, and that maybe sometime, maybe if, like the Avanti Brahmin story, big success and then you come crashing down, and then you may have realizations. So from where we are, yes, it is definitely those who, lots of people, if they want to see it that way, then instead of black, they will see white. I mean, they will see those actions as ideal, everything is synthetic, because they want a synthetic world. Everything very sanitized, everything is very artificial. So, even the value systems will come from that. So it is a matter of the consciousness. So, if we are seeking seriously and sincerely trying to follow, when we distinguish and see that this is not for me, we do our best to educate others if we have the influence, or let's say in this Gita Dan, Gita month, we are trying to through book distribution or if you meet people, but it is ultimately their own karmas, and they will have to go through that. But we certainly feel a great relief and a great good fortune. It's not credit to us, but it's just we're so fortunate, causeless mercy, that we have been not given that difficult situation, that we that it becomes absolutely hopeless to get out. You just completely in it, and then you are, it's like the camel chewing the thorns and finding the blood very sweet. So thinking that actually I'm enjoying it, but not knowing that actually it is just adding to the bondage and making it so difficult. So the perceptions perceptions will change according to our consciousness. So if somebody's consciousness is of some type, then he will look at it and appreciate it, and they may be in the millions. Someone's consciousness is based on the Shastra, and as you are mentioning that, you see that it is very unfortunate, because this is actually binding, and it is only, not only for themselves, but also they'll also have to pay the consequences for misleading so many others, because they're using the attributes, the power, everything for and setting a wrong example. But rather than we trying to do anything, it's not that we are superior or inferior. We're just more fortunate, that's all. I know we may be, and we'll be even more misfortunate than them, if after getting this fortune, if we don't do anything about it. That is ultimately the worst, the most misfortunate person. Someone who's actually been given the knowledge and tries to reject it. Because we now know too much, even if we are weak sometimes, but we do know what is truth. Once you know the absolute truth, there is no way you can forget it. You may live your life accordingly, but you may try to, externally think that I will go away, but it's impossible. So we can just sometimes we can't even imagine how fortunate we have been that we've given this opportunity. That at least will be a deterrent for us not to get carried away. But as far as those who are getting misled by the millions, because that way you normally read what you're meant to read, right? So all this ultimately is the views of some people, and then they will have their own views, or they'll get views inserted, and then that influences, or you see television news and various things. So if your observation is based on that, well, unfortunate. So we should just when we see that, rather than feeling that I am so much better and I'm he doesn't know this, then in fact we are falling into that trap, because we are getting that pride. And that too for no reason, because we have no credit. We have absolutely no credit. We've just been given this causeless mercy. So such instances are there for us to observe, certainly, to warn people who we can. But at the same time, as far as action is concerned, we should enhance our gratitude and our, determination to overcome the weaknesses which inevitably come. To know that, this just shows that how how much deep hole is being dug, and I would have fallen into it. I can still fall into it if I go there. So I've been kept away. I should look at it. So then, instead of some of the minor miseries that are going around us or problems around us, we then start looking at it in a different light. That there's nothing compared to such a thing where everything may be fine. You may be earning 200 crores a year, but what is the value of that? Because now you're just carried away. You have to, if it is your if it is something which is let's say your bodily beauty, and you can imagine the horrible situation when you see yourself, you know the reality, and it's aging, and you have to cover yourself up. Or if it is your skills at something, that also is temporary, is going down. If you're a sportsman, that also is going down. So he's anyway in a miserable condition, but he cannot even show it. He has to be looking in the best way. So, it is what a turmoil. And as they grow older, it becomes worse. And then they're looking everywhere to see that they get the adulation, if they are built on that. So all that we can observe and use that to strengthen our resolve and say that we can sympathize with that person. But we should make sure that we are protected and we are grateful for that, and we double our efforts. I don't know if I answered your question, but... So we'll end here and over to Baldev Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada, Book Distribution Marathon, Ki Jai! So we have nice stories from locally Mumbai and also from the bus party at Rajasthan. In Mumbai, nice story here, three Matajis, they formed a team and they were going shop to shop book distribution. But for around half an hour, there was no result, no one was buying a book. So they came across a police station and they thought, let us go inside and look if some opportunity can be there inside the police station. So three Matajis, this is all always there when you are together, You can do, you can be adventurous when you go together with the devotees. Alone, we cannot make such an adventure. So three Matajis entered the police station and showed the inspector in general, the inspector there, the books. And they told him that, please help us, this is a nice book, Bhagavad Gita.